Welcome to the podcast about investing in startups, where existing investors can learn how to get the best deal possible, and those that have never before invested in startups can learn the keys to success from the venture experts. Your host is Nick Moran, and this is The Full Ratchet.
Welcome back for episode 27 of Best Practices on Angel Investing. Today will be a more involved episode than normal as we're covering two items in best practices number 4, evaluation and picking startups. This topic is broken into 4 categories. First, we will discuss high-level considerations when evaluating startups, and then we will dive into the first of the 3 main branches, the team. With that, let's get started. So the first high-level category on startup evaluation consists of the following. Number 1 is jockeys, horses, and racetracks. Number 2, enthusiasm. 3 is NDAs. Number 4 is the pitch. 5 is scale. Number 6 is schemes. 7 is the exit. 8 is contingencies. Number 9 is burn rates. And finally, number 10 is metrics. So for item number 1, we have jockeys, horses, and racetracks. Often one will find that investors discuss startups in 3 broad categories: the team, the product or technology, and the market. Each of these 3 broad categories has a range of components that merit analysis before an investment. Being mindful of the importance of these 3 branches and how well a startup is positioned for each is often the foundation for investment evaluation. As addressed previously, many early stage investors prefer great founders over great ideas. Jockeys over horses, so to speak. There's a thought that exceptional people will create and adapt the best ideas and find the big markets. Recall George Deeb's comments from episode 5. He'd rather have an A-plus team building a B idea than a B team building an A-plus idea. David S. Rose has also written that the value of execution is 10 times more important than the value of the idea. Naturally, having an A-plus team in an A-plus market working on an A-plus idea is ideal, but these can be very rare. And when dealing with nascent markets and ideas that will change significantly during the early stages, sometimes the people are the most known entity of the 3. Item number 2 is enthusiasm. Investors who have been doing this for a long time will have a story about a startup that checked every box and passed every test, but they just couldn't get excited about it. Some proceeded and some did not, but nearly all seem to have the same message. You, as the investor, must be excited. If you're not enthusiastic and optimistic about the team and product, it will be a long, frustrating engagement. We have already touched on how this is a long-term relationship akin to a marriage, and the hard times and setbacks that will occur are rarely worth it in absence of this fundamental enthusiasm. Okay, the 3rd item on our list is NDAs. The simple message, don't sign them. Venture capitalists and experienced angels will recommend to never sign an NDA. It exposes the investor far too much down the road. And startups that ask you to sign them have really not done their homework on the fundraising process and investor expectations. The 4th item on our list is the pitch. Business plans are not the preferred way to review startups. Typically, a 10-slide deck and a 1-sentence elevator pitch that articulates the problem and the benefit is what's necessary. In a later episode, we will discuss the components that should be present in every pitch deck. Until then, know that most angels do not waste their time reviewing business plans. The 5th item on our list is scale. If you're investing in venture via the traditional price round or convertible, startups must have an opportunity to scale fast and in a defensible way. Bill Payne advised us to refrain from investing in the standard local service business. These can be difficult to scale and defend. If you take an equity position, it can be very difficult to both get the return that you need and get the money out via an exit. And whether service or not, many startups can be quickly eliminated if their 5-year pro forma revenue does not reflect tremendous scale. Remember, the goal is 10x or much higher within 5 years. While forecasts are never accurate, startups must shoot for greatness to achieve it. The next item on our list is the exit. Related to scale, all serious startups should have an awareness of potential exits. Will they be okay with a modest but positive exit that provides them the financial security to move on to something else? Is there a singular focus on this opportunity only becoming a massive exit? As Gabriel Weinberg cautioned us in his Lessons Learned, a strategy of hitting singles and doubles is fine if you can find a lot of them and have no reservations about committing the time, energy, and capital for modest exits. But in this case, he has shifted his focus towards startups that have home run potential with an outsized potential exit. And remember, in this asset class, it is rare for an investor to get their money out unless the startup has a strategic sale or an IPO. The next item on our list is called schemes. Another common trap that startup investors fall into are the scheme businesses. There are a number of startups that have gotten some traction with crafty businesses that trick customers into a purchase, yet provide no intrinsic value. While some of these can be very successful in the short term, will they be sustainable? And even if they figure out a way to scale their scheme and have an exit, do you want your wins to include a scammy business that may make others uncomfortable? That may be okay for some, but certainly doesn't feel right to me. Number 8 on our list is contingencies. Have you asked the startup what they will do if this fails? Their answer can be critical. I have heard the following many times. We'll probably launch a startup on this other problem over here, or I'll go to work for this other startup. It doesn't sound like a full commitment when failure is fully planned out. What feels much better is when the founder starts probing for the cause of the failure. Is it customer adoption, cash, quality? And then discusses the contingencies for addressing those problems. To them, failure is not an option. If there's a problem that is threatening the life of their business, they will do whatever it takes to make sure it doesn't sink the company. And speaking of contingencies, it's a good habit to discuss what will be done if the cash outlook becomes very grim. How will they adjust down their burn rate? What costs will they cut? And as Bill Gurley has recently written about, when founders present items to be cut in a difficult cash situation, ask why they can't be cut now. Are they directly impacting customer growth or engagement? If not, maybe that modern loft office in the entertainment district should move to the industrial district now instead of when the cash runs out. Our next item is burn rates and burn down. We can't have a strong message on costs without discussing burn rate. Every startup should closely track cash flows and understand their monthly burn, i.e. spend. It is pretty straightforward to calculate how much runway this fundraise will provide in months. A common yet surprising oversight from startups is when they will burn through their cash from the current raise within months of a planned subsequent raise. Fundraising can take a lot longer than planned, so either they need accounting help or they're hoping for a miracle. Our final item in this subsection is called metrics. Every startup should be able to articulate to investors the key KPIs used to manage the business. It is usually recommended that the founder and CEO has 3 to 5 metrics that are critical to success and reaching the next milestone. As an investor, assess whether the KPIs are appropriate and ask how often they're reviewed. Startup or not, one can't manage what they don't measure. And well-structured metrics that are reviewed on a regular cycle will provide focus on the key goals, allow issues to be addressed and countermeasured quickly, and gives the investor a much better indication of whether the startup is winning or losing. Realistically, timelines and goals change. When a startup pivots, growth goals, burn rates, and key milestones may be missed. It's those that adapt, are honest, and learn from these missteps that are much better positioned for success. Now that we've discussed the high-level evaluation items, we will move on to the major subcomponents, starting with the team, i.e. the founders. This subsection also includes 10 items. Number 1 is relationship. 2, the sell. 3 is composition. 4 is outliers. 5 is emotional IQ. 6 is profile. 7 is salary. 8 is pivots. Item number 9 is past behavior. And finally, 10 is product founder fit. So let's start with number 1, it's relationship. In general, as an investor, you must like the founder. This is a long-term relationship, and you must trust and like the people in the portfolio companies. As Jeff Carter mentioned, whether it be startups or investors, scumbags are scumbags, and he doesn't work with them. Item number 2 is the sell. It's very critical that founders can sell you on the product or potential. They may not be a salesperson, but they should be able to articulate it in a way that gets you excited. Throughout a startup's lifecycle, they will have to sell themselves and the business to customers, employees, and investors. We all know the feeling of walking into a meeting skeptical and walking out inspired. Technical or not, some have it and some don't. The third item here is composition. Optimal configuration for a founding team is 2 to 3 founders. 5 is too many and 1 is too little. The reality is that founders can get lonely and even depressed. Not having a partner to share the pressure and bounce ideas off is a huge challenge. Naval Ravikant recommends to look for founder composition of a builder and a seller. 2 marketing founders only, or 2 technologists, tends to present a lot of challenges. Outsourcing product development completely makes it hard to iterate, adapt, fix, and update as necessary. Teams consisting of an exceptional engineer or technologist and an exceptional marketer or commercial person have the strongest composition. The next item on our list is outliers. When Rob Goh was a guest, he talked about how this is an outlier's business, and he looks not for great people, but for exceptional people, not just the top 10 or 20%. When they conduct diligence and make calls for references, their portfolio company founders are not described as really good. They are described as the best. The next item on our list is emotional IQ. When it comes to assessing people, one must have their emotional IQ radar up. With so many investors advocating to bet on the jockey early on, one should get a sense for a founder's personality while you are evaluating. This could be the single most critical component to picking. The subtleties of interaction can significantly help you when assessing integrity, work ethic, and resourcefulness. Subtle tactics like timing email responsiveness and asking about relationships with previous investors can provide great insight into commitment and integrity. The next item here is profile. Founders that easily get discouraged or overwhelmed will likely give up. As mentioned, if you can understand and empathize well with founders, your odds of picking great ones will go up. A list of the most often cited characteristics of great founders includes resourceful, intelligent, energetic, obsessive, flexible, resilient, honest, driven, and determined. The best founders will find a way, and people with a profile of these characteristics are obsessed with finding a way. The next item on our list is salary. On the whole, salary should be low, and equity upside should be high. In general, the standard salary range is anywhere from $40,000 to $90,000 for a founder. Paul Graham has stated that if he could only ask one question of a startup, it would be, how much salary is the founder taking? There is a surprisingly strong indirect correlation between salary level and success. The higher the salary, the less likely to succeed. Item number 8 is pivots. The vast majority of startups will have to pivot their strategy, product, channel, messaging, monetization, target market, etc. This should be the expectation at the seed stage, not a surprise. Are the founders willing to pivot for success, or are they obstinate and unyielding in their assumptions? Number 9 is past behavior. It is very likely that a startup team will treat you much like they've treated previous investors. I have had more than 3 cases now where I was very close to making an investment when the cap table discussion comes up. And in each instance, the founders sort of gave a chuckle and a smirk while saying that the previous investors don't have any dilution protection, so we'll just go ahead and dilute them out. The real thing that incensed me here is that these are early friends and family investors, and these founders had so little integrity that they enjoy the prospect of screwing these people. While I understand that close attention to terms allows me to include the necessary protections, if founders are treating previous investors poorly, guess who's next? And the so-called marriage of angel investing is not at all interesting with people like these. Our 10th and final item here is product founder fit. You often hear angels talk about product market fit and proof of concept. Maybe even more important than those is product founder fit. Simply, this asks the question, is the founder the best person to be leading the growth and development of this particular product? Does their background, experience, and interests lead them uniquely to address this problem and solution? An investor should never have to keep a founder motivated to work on their business. Is the founder totally familiar with the target market? Do they have a track record relevant to the venture? Whether they have direct experience in the industry vertical or they are applying horizontal expertise to a new vertical, founders should have a strong knowledge of the industry dynamics and customers. While Jerry Newman talked about how he was a top 10 sector expert in ad tech, he still had the expectation that he would be learning from his startup founders. While his strategic role may be that of teacher, his sector role is that of a student. Just to close things out here, a word on founders. If you pick fantastic people, that doesn't guarantee success. But show me any startup success that doesn't have fantastic people. While it's not a guarantee of a unicorn exit, it does seem to be a requirement. And looking for situations where there is true product founder fit will help secure the team's commitment to that mission. Can you measure how bad someone wants something? I don't know, but it sure would be valuable if you could. I appreciate the feedback so far. As mentioned before, please give me a quick mention on your favorite social media channel when you get a chance, and sign up for the newsletter over at fullratchet.net. Until next time, remember to overprepare, choose carefully, and invest confidently. Thanks for joining me.